Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't joined our wonderful marketing transformation community yet, go to innovabiz.co and collect your free gift as well. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
The whole reason why we want to create an event in the first place is because we wanted a mechanism that captured people's attention for long enough so that we could really show them what we're about, right? Because we know that if we show people what we're about, then they'll either want to work with us or they'll want to know more because, you know, we're very comfortable about what we do and we love what we do and we're passionate about it.
Welcome back. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. If you haven't yet listened to my recent conversations with Jason Case of The Pulse Spot and with author Ed Cressy, then do go check them out and listen after you've listened to today's conversation, of course. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Maxwell Nee of High Performing Coach. He helps passionate coaches become purpose-driven entrepreneurs. High-performing coaches' programs are personal, deep, and designed from their experience of mastering tried and tested strategies. In our discussion today, Maxwell talked to me about the time zone model versus the location model. We discussed the importance of content production to building trust, and Maxwell talked to me about pivoting live event businesses to online businesses. Without further ado, then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Maxwell Nee. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today, all the way from Barcelona in Spain, Maxwell Nee from High Performing Coach, and he helps coaches scale their business with sold-out online and in-person events. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Maxwell. It's a real privilege to have you as my guest.
Thanks, Jürgen. I'm really, really happy to be here.
Now, it's kind of funny. I think you're probably the first person I've had on the podcast from Barcelona, but you've got an Aussie accent.
Yeah. I first visited Barcelona a few years ago, and I thought, gee, I'd really love to live here. And I've just recently found a visa that I could jump on. So I just took that as soon as I found it.
Mm. So your background in Australia originally was corporate banking, and then I noticed you spent time in Toronto, and now you're in Barcelona. So what's the go there?
Yeah. So I was in corporate banking at the Commonwealth Bank, and I walked in one day, and I looked at my boss, my boss's boss, my boss's boss's boss, and then I realized that I absolutely did not want any of their jobs. So then it really hit me, what the hell am I doing here? And then I just had a look inside within like a split second. It was really interesting, actually, and I realized that, you know, the corporate job had always been my plan B, right? And plan A was to have my own online business because I wanted to travel, I wanted the freedom to travel. So then later that year, I quit my job, moved to Toronto, and, you know, bought an online course in digital marketing and started learning how to support businesses with their marketing efforts and growth.
Okay, and why Toronto first?
Yeah, so the original logic at that point in time was that I've always wanted to live in New York, but the US it isn't easy to move to the US. So I thought Toronto was as close as I could go to okay. New York. So it's yeah. proximity to New York. Yeah.
You could drive down for the weekend.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm.
All right. And so the online business was providing marketing services to other businesses, was it?
Yeah, yeah. So the first niche that I had, first iteration of my own business would be providing marketing services to gyms because I love fitness, mm-hmm. gyms and fitness and health centers, and also to life coaches as well, which I then ended up dropping the gyms because it just didn't really excite me as much as I thought it would. And I've kept on in supporting coaches, life coaches in building their business.
Mm, okay. And why did you choose the life coaches then? Because sort of, is that related to the gyms or did you have a connection?
Yeah. So I met a few and I found the work that they did, you know, really, really quite interesting. And also I realized that after meeting a few that the part of their brain that they use that makes them really good and intuitive in how they help people with their coaching is almost the complete opposite part of the brain that they would need to build a business that's really great at marketing itself. So there's a big, from my perspective at that point in time, there was a big gap in what they enjoyed doing and what they were open to learning to grow their business. So they've almost got like one half of the toolkit really, really well well placed in terms of how they operate. But then the other half of the toolkit of how to grow their business, how to market themselves was a gap in the ones that I met. So I thought I could fill that gap.
Mm. All right. Now you talk in your website and promotional material about filling events, and I mean there's lots of questions I have around that, particularly right now with the challenges of the pandemic. But let's talk about events first off. So a lot of coaches have this model of running events, maybe a free half day event or something like that, that people can get an idea of what they do, they can get to know them. And then the next step from that is if they like what they do and they see value in it, that they sign up for one of their programs. So how do you kind of promote or help the coaches market that? And are there other models?
Yeah. Let me start with why I really believe why now is such a really great time to do this, right? To create online events. So our business was doing in-person events every 1 to 2 months. And we had, just one-off webinars and things like that every now and then that were always live. But it was the in-person events that really, really generated like the business, created great content. It was really like a life engine of our business. And then the pandemic hit, and then we had an event that was already sold out, and we didn't know whether or not if we switched it to online, if it would be just as effective, right? And also with the pandemic and everyone's concerns and fears and reasons as to why they should slow down rather than really go for their business was definitely in the air as well, right? So we did it. So the pandemic gave us a really good nudge to switch all of our events to online. Our planned live events for the year at physical locations were switched to online just via Zoom, via a group Zoom call. And the first one we had, it literally was just as effective, if not even more effective, in terms of the people who wanted to work with us afterwards, in terms of the content it created, in terms of everything. So during the pandemic, you know, whilst I was in London at the time, when we were locked down for about, 4 or 5 months, our business literally grew by 300% during COVID. So COVID's sort of been the best thing that's ever happened to our business. And there's a few reasons for that I sort of picked out. One of the main things that we noticed right at the beginning, which is really, really interesting, was that everyone that had been lurking, you know how you have those people that sort of want to work with you, but they're not sure, and they just sort of hang around, and they almost read and like every post, but they sort of don't really take any action. They're just collecting information about you. It seemed like the pandemic pushed all of those people that were on the fence either into action, or they just completely withdrew. So we got like an instant uplift of people ready to take action immediately, because they said, now's the time. So that was something completely unexpected, and we didn't know what would happen. And because our business model has always been online, we were just really, really set up, and we had everything ready to deliver to, you know, 400 new clients if they came in the door right now already, because we were always an online model in terms of our delivery. And so with that last missing piece working of the live events being the main sort of client interest generating machine, being able to work just as effectively online, everything just fell into place for us to grow very, very quickly and very, very effectively. So in terms of the like promotions and the strategy to fill those events, we literally did the same thing that we did to fill live events, which a lot of people do, a lot of people are familiar with. But the only difference is that instead of them showing up to an event or being restricted to a geographical location, we could promote that to an entire time zone. So we operate in a time zone model rather than a location model. So, you know, I will share an event. Our typical event runs from about 9 to 5 in the UK. And we have people joining in, you know, in Eastern Standard Time. So they're about 5 hours behind at 4 in the morning. We even have people joining in at about, you know, 1, 2 in the morning from the West Coast of the US. So what I would say is, you know, if your event adds value and if your event hits the nail on the head of solving a problem for the people that you serve, then people will join from anywhere in the world at any time in the world. Absolutely. And the promotions and the strategy, you know, the pricing strategy, all that sort of stuff, which we can go into a little bit later, is the same. It works the same. You know, it works the same for a live event that just happens to be delivered online in front of a computer. Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of things there that are fascinating. First of all, I like the idea of the time zone model, particularly for a full day event where, you know, you typically wouldn't expect people to get up in the middle of the night and spend 6 or 7 hours participating in that event and being alert and paying attention all that time. And yet, on the other hand, you found that there were people that did that. I'm curious, how did you market those online events? You said the marketing was pretty much the same, but something must have been different in order to attract a wider geographical area, because with the in-person events, you can focus it very much on a geography and as well as, you know, the ideal client type persona.
So, you know, I've seen a lot of other events. I don't know how well they do, but I've seen them, a lot of other events that happen for free, or they happen for like $1, you know, like a $1 summit for 3-4 days. So our events are premium price. They start at about £49, which is about, you know, close to 100 Australian dollars. And the full price is about £139. So what we've found that works really, really well is the genuine urgency of an event. So, you know how, if you were to buy a ticket to go see like Bruno Mars, and there's like the early bird ticket, there's a pre-sale ticket, and then those are for the people that register 6 months in advance, the original fans, and then the ticket prices slowly go up as they sell out prior to the date. We have that model. So we have like the festival, the concert ticket model, which is I love it because it's genuine. It creates urgency. The urgency creates value. So it puts all the right ingredients in the right place for people to either take action or make the decision to collect more information so that they are ready to take action. So, you know, we have the vast majority of our tickets are pre-sale. And then as they increase in price, you know, it drops down. But we you know, we would sell 80% of our tickets before it gets to the last 2 weeks. And we often sell out before because we hold our prices very firm. And what I would say is if you want people to get up at 2 a.m, they've got to invest something, you know. So like that model would, you know, it wouldn't have worked if it was free.
Yeah.
And people, the perceived value of just putting a price on there, you know, it's counterintuitive. But, you know, the whole reason why we want to create an event in the first place is because we wanted a mechanism that captured people's attention for long enough so that we could really show them what we're about, right? Because we know that if we show people what we're about, then they'll either want to work with us or they'll want to know more, because, you know, we're very confident about what we do and we love what we do and we're passionate about it. So the trick is, how do we get someone to sit in front of a computer for long enough to take everything in? You know, how do we get someone to sit? It's almost like when you watch a movie, how do you get someone to sit there for long enough for that with no distractions so that you have the undivided attention to really articulate what you have to offer? And the way to do that is to get them to invest, right? And there's a magical thing when you put a price tag on top of something that people go in there looking for more value. You know, instead of going in there, if it's free, oh, is this worth my time? Should I disconnect now or later?
Yeah, and there's always that thing, well, I can register for this, it doesn't cost me anything, and then I'll make the decision later, right? Whether I have time or not. So it's in 2 weeks. In 2 weeks' time, I'll decide, you know, 5 minutes beforehand. And particularly if there's a recording, then I might say, well, I'll wait for them to send me the recording. And often I find that I don't even ever listen to the recording either. So, you know, there's exactly. Obviously not a real strong level of commitment there, but you sign up because you know it's not costing you anything and you might get to it. But then if that business were to look at their statistics and they see a lot of people like me that signed up just on the off chance that I might decide at the last minute to join in, then their conversion rate looks pretty average, right?
Yeah. You know, it's so amazing how we've been trained to perceive value and price. You know, like I genuinely feel, because we've increased our prices gradually over time to see where the boundaries are. I genuinely feel that people, we're selling more tickets now with a higher price and the exact same workshop, same description, same title, same content online than right at the beginning. And it has a higher price.
Yeah. Well, how do you capture people's attention to start with? So, you know, somebody that might be interested in what you have to offer, how do you capture their attention first so that they say, this looks interesting, I'll find out more, and then read through your information and make the decision?
Yeah. So there's a few nuggets I can share in terms of, you know, how to create an event that's desirable, right? Because we're not talking desirable so that people want to get committed to it. You know, I'm making these numbers up, but my intuition tells me that 70% of the reason why people would go to an event is because of the title. Okay. So your title has to provide them an outcome. And it has to provide an outcome that's really, really pulls people in, right? And not just any people, your specific target market. So when we first launched our first event, I wasn't sure. You know, I wasn't sure if it should be grow your coaching business or boom your coaching business or business booming for coaches, like just, you know, all these different variations. So I took the top three that I thought were the best titles. And then I gave them to our Facebook group where we had about not that many, probably like 200-300 coaches at the time. I said, which one do you like the most? And then I just picked the one that had the most votes because that was like live feedback from our target audience. And I put that in the title, right? And then later on, what I learned was the more specific you can be in your title and in your description, the better, because very few people in the market are game enough to be specific in the outcome that they can help people achieve, right? And the easiest way to offer specificity in an outcome is to put numbers in there, right? So, and, you know, so like the really sort of often cheesy and yucky example is I can help you build a $100,000 a year business, right? So that's very cheesy and yucky. And we've all seen it. But like having that number in there, it's almost like a page break for the mind. You know, the mind reads numbers and percentages very differently to the way it reads words, and it takes that on. It takes specificity almost as like credibility, because the mind doesn't see that very often. So in our title, we've got how to build, it used to be how to grow your coaching business, and now it says how to build a 5-figure per month coaching business, right? Both of them are accurate. Both of them can articulate the same message, but just having that number in there, in the specificity of what people can achieve in their own lives, has made a huge difference to the uptake and the clicks and all that sort of thing. In terms of an easy win to help people find an outcome, the easiest way is to think about, you know, how YouTube videos first, you know, what was YouTube used for right in the beginning? YouTube was used for education. More than not. So it was all these recipes on how to bake a cake, how to change a flat tire, how to change a light bulb, right? That was the biggest videos on YouTube until entertainment started to come in, where people would sing and people would create funny videos and all that sort of thing. So how to is a really easy win for people to put into their titles, you know, how to launch your first podcast, how to fill your first event, how to build your personal brand, how to is really easy, and it really captures the eye.
Hmm. Yeah, that's fascinating. The power of the title. And so your title has more purpose than simply to read on from there.
Yeah. And, you know, the way I see it is, I learned this in school, is in journalism, it should be the same as a journalism article. So the way newspapers are written is the title is the most eye-catching thing, right? As we could all imagine why. And all the important facts of the car crash or the statement or the money scandal or whatever, the most important facts are written at the top, and then they get less important to the bottom, because the newspaper editor doesn't take for granted your attention span, like when you're going to stop reading. So they capture your attention with the most juicy, you know, embellished way to articulate the car crash, right? And then the first paragraph has the most juicy, embellished facts. The next one has the second most juicy, embellished facts. And then it goes less interesting as it gets to the bottom. You know, at the bottom, it'll say the time and the date of when it happened, right? Like the least interesting facts. So I take on how I write the description for our events the same. So we put, you know, the title has to be the juicy, most embellished version of what we have to offer, whilst being accurate and authentic and genuine. And then it goes into the thing that people want to get their hands on the most in the first paragraph, and the next one, then it slowly fades off into the details. So right at the bottom of our events, we will then talk about the agenda, the times and the breaks, and the price.
All right, that's fascinating. And so when people then register for the event and come along, so how does the event actually work? And what have you changed when you moved to online? I guess that's two questions. So let's do the first one.
Yeah, so how does it work? 7 days before the event, I'll send everyone an email of the access details for the Zoom room. And it's literally a Zoom room. So we pay Zoom, what is it, 20, 21 Australian dollars for a group Zoom room, and everyone just joins. And, you know, fingers crossed, Zoom has worked fine, up like perfectly up until now. people don't get disconnected and fall out and people receive everything at the same time. And we deliver it exactly the same. And just being mindful to have a few more breaks, because people, you know, if you're not mindful when the breaks are, then people will take it upon themselves to turn their screen off,
walk away, and
walk out of the room. But if you give them adequate stretch breaks, drink breaks, toilet breaks, then you've got them in front of you when you want them, not when their bladder, up until when their bladder holds up. Yeah.
All right. So what kind of content do you deliver in that event then? Because I'm guessing, even though you've charged for that event, that the purpose for you is to take them on to a bigger program, or at least to give them options to go on to a bigger program. So what do you deliver in the event, and how do you give them options?
Yeah. So we always make sure to deliver, you know, that their £49 or $100 or whatever is something that they feel good about spending when they walk away, right? That they feel like they've gotten at least 10 times that. So we give as much as we can within the time. It just so happens that the way we deliver out, actually, I think it's the same with every business. We basically give them the exact strategy and everything that we do. And we tell them that, you know, to actually implement this and master this, it takes ongoing training development, but this is it. And we give them as much as we can for them to, you know, go out of the gate and start, you know, for the right person who comes to our events and with the right listening and having had enough experience in the industry, they could potentially take everything that they've, it's almost like a book. Yeah. You know how when someone writes a book, they give everything, but then it's just information. You know, there's no commitment, there's no accountability, there's no support, there's no way to ask questions. But if you put the book in the hands of the right person who has the right drive, right motivation, they'll suck everything out of the book and apply it without having to work with that person. So our events are like our book. So you could actually suck everything you wanted out of that. There'd be nuances you'd be missing because we don't have enough time to go into the nuances, but it's just like how a really big name would use a book to promote their ideas and their concepts and the way they do things and why it's different to their competitors.
Except that in the case of an event like that, people get to know you at a more personal level than they would if they had a book where your picture was on the cover or inside the front cover, but then the rest of it was really just words on the page.
Yeah. You know, it's all connection, especially now, right? Because, you know, 90% of the events on the planet didn't happen this year, right? So people need to find new ways to connect with people. You know, all the authors, all the really big names, I can't say enough like how much of a great opportunity it is right now to go out there and have a go at having these online events, because all the people that were doing the live events that you could never compete with, that had the big convention centers and had the big Facebook ad budget, they've literally been wiped off the face of the earth, right? And for people, for a large company like that to have to work things out from ground zero, they're not able to move as quickly as a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 person company that has something really great to offer,
right?
And you know, it's literally screen time. How much screen time can you have someone where they're looking at you, watching your videos or listening to your podcasts or seeing your face? How much of that can you put in front of the right people for them to feel connected to you? Because if they feel connected to you, then they're so much more open to investing more with you, whether that's time or money, right? It's not really that much about the credibility and the brand name and the logos or whatever, because if it comes down to very simply, you know, like, and trust.
Yeah.
And you could do that for free, you know, with a with a Zoom account.
Hmm. Yeah, no, the relationship thing is, I mean, that's a big thing for our whole marketing model, and, you know, keeping it really human, keeping that connection going. One of the things I'm curious about, I mean, I noticed when the pandemic first hit and when, you know, things started to get shut down all around the world, that all of a sudden I got bombarded with emails and advertising and whatever saying, yeah, we're running this online event. Here's another online event. And I thought, gee, you know, I could be on online events 24 hours a day here all of a sudden, whereas before, you know, you might have gotten maybe one or two a day, and they were longer term, whereas now it's all of a sudden like tomorrow we're running this webinar, you know, join us. How do you stand out from the noise if you're taking your event online? How do you stand out from all that noise?
Yeah, that's a really good question. How do you stand out from the noise? Let me give a few different answers. So the way we stand out is we charge a higher price than any of our competitors. And we hold nothing back in our content. So the thing to remember is with online events or anything is that whether the event's free, which doesn't really make sense, or it's a high price, people's skepticism and survival mechanisms will come into, will start triggering off, right? So even if the event's free, that the people are almost like defending their safety. Like, do I want to be put in a room with this person, with this place where I'm potentially going to be sold something and where I'll be put in this uncomfortable position, right? So the way that we have pushed through that is by putting out, you know, as much content as possible. Our YouTube channel is like an endless stream of videos where people can go in there and watch as many videos as they like until they satisfy all of those trust boxes. Is this person real? Has this person been around for long enough, right? And also, you've got to be absolutely transparent in, you know, how people find you online. So I'll give you an example. Like, if you walked into a dentist, and the dentist was wearing a black hoodie, and they were wearing a mask, and they wouldn't let you see their face, and they had something that distorted their voice, you know, would you feel comfortable having them, you know, pry open your mouth and go into your teeth? Right? We probably wouldn't.
Yeah.
But that's it. Yeah, that's the equivalent of having your Facebook profile in private, that of having your LinkedIn profile in private, of having all your things on private, thinking, oh, but this is my personal life. Yes, that's accurate, but that doesn't help the feeling. That doesn't help the feeling people get, because all they could possibly get from you online is that. And that's the equivalent of like the dentist having a black mask on and a black hoodie with a distorted voice saying, you know, pay me money or trust me.
Mm.
Right. So you've got to be transparent. You've got to be authentic, and you've got to be transparent and authentic in your social presence across all of them. You can't pick and choose. You can't cherry pick. Right. So the feedback that we get a lot of time is, you know, I went with you guys because you guys just seem like genuine and authentic, and I felt like I could just reach out to you. You know, I felt like I could just ask you a personal question. You know, the dentist that's smiling, wearing the white coat, that's laughing, that's got the pictures of the Simpsons on the roof for you to look at, you know, and that makes you feel really comfortable. If you feel like you can just ask them a personal question and they'll have a laugh with you, then that's how you break through the noise.
Hmm.
So you've got to work out a way to do that online.
Yeah. So one of the keys then, if I heard that correctly, was that you have to have a lot of content there that people can actually see and then get to know you at a at a kind of a more personal level, at an authentic level, as well as see that, hey, you know what you're talking about, you know what you're doing in your particular field.
Yeah. And don't be afraid to be human. You know, your Facebook profile, you know, we work with a lot of coaches and a lot of them create two profiles because they've got like this belief that they want to keep business away from personal.
Mm.
And that's just like, you know, the dentist wearing the mask, right? And people know that. People know that that's not human. Like they might not say it, they might not be able to put their finger on it, but there's something about it that just doesn't make sense. And the way they'll react to that is they won't trust you.
Mm.
Because you don't trust yourself enough. You don't trust yourself enough to show your true self to them. So why should they trust you?
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah. I mean, I've taken a diet off Facebook because it's just so noisy and so much garbage there now. But in terms of, you know, people finding out what I do there and so on, if they connect with me, then that's what they see. And I mean, I take the philosophy that I've got nothing to hide, but also it will be much too much work to maintain two profiles and then make sure that, you know, if I did have something to hide that I wanted to post it on Facebook. I mean, it's kind of a paradox, isn't it? If you've got something to hide, but you're still posting it on Facebook, that I make sure that this bit goes over here and this other bit can go into the more public forum.
Yeah, it's just, it creates so much. It just takes a little mindset shift to remove all of that work, increase the effectiveness in your business. And, you know, so let me try to give an example. Imagine that, you know, that your client, for lack of a better example, is a rabbit and the rabbit wants to go down the rabbit hole. If you block that rabbit from going down the rabbit hole, they're going to be unhappy. You've got to let them go as deep as they want to satisfy their curiosity. Whether that's just finding you on YouTube, whether that's just finding articles about you on LinkedIn, or whether that's all the way to them sending you a message saying, hey, Jürgen, a personal message on Facebook saying, hey, Jürgen, I saw your podcast. I just got a lot out of it. I just wanted to share that with you. If you let them go all the way in to satisfy their curiosity, you know, and the way to tick off that box would be to then reply to them, say, hey, I appreciate what you said, Jürgen, right? To respond to them personally, then that gives them everything that they need and has you stand out so much more.
Hmm. Yeah, it's definitely that connection is really important, particularly if people do reach out, like you say.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
All right. This has been fabulous. It's sort of interesting to hear how the pandemic has kind of impacted those in-person events, but how, you know, it's been easy for you to transition to that online event model. And I think, you know, a lot of people miss this in kind of lamenting the inability to have these in-person events. And I see that certainly there are some businesses where the in-person model that they run is probably quite unique and maybe less suited to an online model. But I think the online events does offer a whole heap of opportunity. Like you say, you know, you're not limited geographically and it certainly opens up some other things in my mind as well.
Yeah. It's, you know, one of my mentors said on a podcast, he said, you know, he's a CEO of his business. He said that COVID-19 has completely put him to shame in terms of a CEO. COVID-19 has been able to mobilize, motivate, and force his whole company to innovate far, far more superiorly as a CEO than he ever could.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you put a crisis in the hands of someone that's ready to do something with it, then it can often be some of the best nudges in the right direction that you could possibly have. And you know, whenever in our business we find things maybe slipping or like any doubts come in, like we just sort of bring ourselves to that back to that idea.
Yeah, I think there's quite a few people have said to me recently, it's the most adaptable person and the most adaptable businesses that do the best, particularly in troubled times. And I think what you're describing there is those people that have that adaptability all of a sudden coming to the fore and saying, oh, there's different ways to do this and we could try this or we could try that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think it's a good point now to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round, and it's designed to help our audience who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field with some tips from your experience. So I'm going to ask 5 questions. Hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers and inspire the listener to go and do something awesome today as a result.
Cool.
So what do you think the number one thing is anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
The number one thing, it would be to ask impossible questions. I think either to ask their team or themselves impossible questions. I heard this quote once that was something like, a question creates a problem which gives you something really big to live into. You know, because when you ask questions that can't be answered, it makes you look for the answers instead of asking questions where you know the answer.
Okay. So how do you come up with these impossible questions?
In our business, the impossible questions come to me when I have a blue sky day. So blue sky day is a day where there's no computer, there's no phone, there's no social media, there's no connection. It's outside with a blue sky and a pen and paper. So I don't know the source of them, but I know that they come when you're not in the habitual grind of the work that you do.
Yeah. So you're kind of leaving yourself everything at rest and leaving your mind at rest so that things can bubble up from maybe deeper down.
Yeah.
Love it. Great. All right. Now, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
It would be to get a coach. If there's someone that you believe can help you get to where you want to go, just pay the money. Just pay the money, because not paying the money, not taking the action, in my experience, has cost me so much more than just paying the money early. And also, so we mentioned like watching webinars, right? Like there's this endless supply of webinars. I heard of a really good idea once, which I try to do like once every few weeks. And I basically watch a webinar from someone that I hate because it's, if I keep watching, things from people that I like, I'm just going to keep learning the same thing. But the new ideas are in the people that I hate because I would have never seen them before.
That's an interesting take. Yeah. It's sort of innovation. So look at something you wouldn't perhaps choose to look at normally.
Yeah. If there's someone that really doesn't gel with you, you've never watched any of their content because they annoy you, watch one.
Yeah, I love that. And it's also, I was watching some news things recently where I thought, oh, gosh, I shouldn't be watching this, but it sort of came up in my feed and I thought, no, I'll have a look at it because it'll challenge me. Now, I have to say that some of it was pretty ordinary, and I won't mention what it is, but you can probably guess. Well, those listeners that are regular listeners will probably guess what kind of stuff it would be. I think that what you're pointing out is an interesting way to challenge your assumptions.
Because the assumptions open or close your thinking, right? Where the new ideas comes from is it's breaking through that your own boundaries of not having those assumptions, which is only human to have them, but you got to get committed to breaking through them.
Yeah.
And the way I do that is to watch a webinar from someone that I hate.
All right. Now, what's a favorite resource that you use most often?
Webinars. Like I love, I commit myself to expanding my knowledge because a webinar is someone's best thinking. It's a thing that it's the best I've got to offer because that's what's going to entice people to work with them. So I watch webinars from any and everyone to have a quick look at their best thinking distilled for me in a way that I can absorb. And I'm also, you know, I always try to go in there open with the idea to potentially pay them the money.
Hmm.
Because if I like the idea, then why wouldn't I pay them the money?
Hmm. All right. Well, that's a good philosophy to have. And like you say, good webinars are usually really valuable because people do display their best stuff. And they're often trying to get you to buy a bigger program. So it's usually a great resource. Now, what's the best way to keep a client on track?
The best way to keep a client on track. So this would be like in a program or like an ongoing.
Let's say in your programs. I mean, you talked earlier about accountability, which was something that comes if people go into the program from your event that they've signed up for. So accountability is one thing that they get when they go into the bigger program. So if they go into that bigger program and there's some steps that you lay out for them and say, you know, you've got to do these things to get to that five-figure a month coaching business, how do you kind of keep them on track that they're following the program and getting the result that you know that they can get if they do the things that you've laid out?
Yeah. Perfect. So let me give an example. You know how when you're in school and your teacher's away and the replacement teacher comes in, and within the first 3 seconds of when they walk in, everyone in the classroom is making a decision on if they're one of the strict teachers or if they're one of the cool teachers?
Yeah.
Right. So borrowing this from my co-founder, Ryan Matthey, context is decisive. So when that teacher first walks in the room, how they act, their mannerisms, you know, it's like these lions are trying to like smell fear, right? These kids of the lions are trying to smell fear. Is this person going to be cool? Are they going to make my day better or worse? That's the decision that all those kids are making. So bringing that into a client situation, how the first interaction and the way that engagement arrangement program is set up determines everything. It creates the context. So what we do in our business is we have a series of agreements that we get our clients to buy into, and we tell them and we give them the context as to why, because it'll help them create the best result. So we set everything up right at the beginning with really, really powerful context to let them know that this is the way to succeed in our particular program.
Hmm. Yeah, so really good onboarding. So the first experience is the most important.
Yeah. Hmm. Because, you know, everything, like the brain, your clients will never tell you, but there's all these subconscious decisions and things that they're making in the background, just like how when that teacher first walks in, the kids are just thinking, oh, they're going to be nice or scary, nice or scary, nice or scary. So your clients will come in saying, you know, how little work can I do? How little work can I do? How little work can I do? Right? That's what they're constantly trying to tick off on and off in the background, but they won't say it because it happens subconsciously.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, clear and powerful context up front and good onboarding.
Yeah.
Okay. And what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
The number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves. At risk of sounding cheesy, it would be to lean more into just being you and operating the way that you like to operate. You know, in our business and the way we deliver our products, I like to swear because I'm Australian and because I like to express myself. I like to give funny analogies. I like to give examples that are present in my life, like the teacher example. I use that a bit for different things. And so I would say just lean into that as much as possible. So lean into what works for you as much as possible, because it's a bit like dating. You know, if you go into a date pretending to be someone else, the worst thing that could happen is that person could fall in love with the person you're pretending to be, not who you are. So it's the same in business. If you show up as someone else, the worst thing that could happen is you build this business around something that you're not, then you're in there trying to survive this thing that you're not, instead of just having a business that's created for you and that works for you.
Mm. And it takes up so much energy, right, to pretend to be somebody else, because you're being an actor all the time.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's a job. You know, I know a lot of business owners that have created that for themselves, and it's no different to when they were still in corporate. So they've created a corporate job for themselves outside of corporate with all the problems and none of the benefits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I love it. All right. Well, thanks, Maxwell. This has been really fabulous. Now, where can people find out more about you and your business and maybe even get in touch and say thanks for what you've shared today?
Cool. Yeah, I appreciate any reaching out. So you can email me directly if you like, maxwell@highperforming.coach. And if you like to attend one of our, we have like free workshops that we do every now and then. They're on the homepage of our website, which is highperforming.coach.
All right. And we'll have links to that in the show notes then, so people can check that out. Now, do you have any parting advice for our listener today?
Parting advice. I think the biggest thing that I could help people see or begin to see is that if you're not where you want to be and you haven't taken the actions to get you to where you want to be, if every time I've been really honest with myself about that, there's been an underlying layer of fear there somewhere in regard to some action. And my parting advice would be the more authentic and straight you can be with yourself about identifying that it's actually fear, and it's not about not having enough time, and it's not about not having enough money, or it's not about being a perfectionist or all that sort of stuff, that it's actually about the fear of getting it wrong, then that will give you more empowerment to actually deal with and break through what's been holding you stuck.
Hmm. So really being aware of, really digging down and self-aware about what is it that I'm afraid of here?
Yeah.
And it may be, I mean, the perfectionist thing might be, I'm afraid somebody will think it's not good enough, or it, or people will point out the mistakes in it and criticize me for making mistakes, as opposed to appreciating what I've actually created.
Yeah, yeah. And when you speak it out loud like that, like how you have Yogan, it loses its grip.
You know? That's right, yeah.
You know, so confronting it.
Sounds trivial, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Sounds trivial.
And yet it holds us back. Mm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, wonderful. Now, finally, who else should I get on this podcast and why?
Ooh, great question. All the people that I like are the generic people. Like, you know, I think everyone should have Elon Musk on their podcast if you can get him.
Yeah. Well, I've had a few people suggest Elon Musk, and we haven't sort of succeeded in getting him on yet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's not to say I'm giving up.
Yeah. But I tell you what. So we had a workshop on Friday, and Marissa Pia was on the workshop. And her mission is, which she succeeded, was to revolutionize the therapy industry, right? Because the logic behind her thinking was that in the industry, people believe that therapy needs to be long, painful, and hard. But she went in there with the mindset that if you're a doctor and you're there to fix someone's headache, and someone has a cracking headache, they don't want a long, painful, and hard relationship before you actually give them the medicine. They just want the medicine. Mm. So she's about fast results in a slow industry. So I think what she's doing and the way she looks at things is very innovative.
Mm. Sounds fascinating. So we'll get an intro to Marissa from you and see if we can get her on for a chat.
Cool. Cool.
Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights so generously today, Maxwell. I've really enjoyed this and learned a lot about your model and the filling the online webinars that you've transitioned to in this crazy time, but obviously done it really well because the business has just boomed in this time. So that's a great testament to you, but also it's a shining light, I think, that just because we've got this environment where we can't get together in person, that there's still things that we can do to keep our business going and to add value. I think that's the important thing, to add value to our clients. So thanks for that and all the best for the future, and let's stay in touch.
Beautiful. Awesome. Pleasure. Thanks, Jürgen.
I hope you enjoyed that informative conversation with Maxwell and took something away from the episode. There were so many valuable tips in this episode, from crafting compelling headlines to changing business models in changing times. I'd love to know what you took away from Maxwell's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Maxwell Knee. That is MaxwellNee, all lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Maxwell Knee. You'll also find contact information there for getting in touch with Maxwell, as well as links to the High Performing Coach website, to his social media pages, and the other resources we spoke about in our conversation today. If you like this episode, please share it with two other people that it might help. Tag me in that share and I'll reach out to you with a special surprise. Maxwell suggested that we have a conversation with author, motivational speaker, and pioneering hypnotherapy trainer Marissa Peer on a future InnovaBuzz podcast episode. So Marissa, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Maxwell Knee. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got yet more fantastic guests lined up, including executive coach and author Michael Dietrich Chastain and feng shui expert Patricia Lohan. Thanks for listening to this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the show to be reminded of new episodes. It's free to subscribe. Leave a review if you like. Even if you don't like me, I'm okay with that. I'm asking you to leave a review because it helps other people find this show. Go to innovabiz.co to join our marketing transformation community and access a free gift my team and I made for you. It's the Marketing Master Mini Class. We want to give you everything you need to transform your marketing into a human-centered, relationship-focused growth engine. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.